Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Family Talk with psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and I'm so excited to bring you the second day of my interview with J. Warner Wallace. He's the author of Cold Case Christianity, a homicide detective investigates the claims of Christianity. If you missed yesterday's show, you're going to want to download it from our website at drjamesdobson.org to get all the details. Here's just a taste. J. Warner Wallace is a former cold case detective with the L.A. Police Department. He was a staunch atheist, but one day he decided to apply the same investigative skills he used on the job to examine the claims of Christianity. What he discovered led him to an unshakable faith in Christ, and now he's passionate about sharing his discoveries with everyone, and especially with young people, so they'll be able to stand strong in their faith. In today's broadcast, he'll go into more depth about how parents can use his book to more effectively talk to their children about Christianity. Before we jump into the broadcast, let me remind you that we recorded this program at the International Christian Retail Show, so that explains the noise you can hear in the background. Now, let's get to the program.
My own personal story is that my dad is an atheist, but he remarried in the 60s. His second wife is Mormon. I have six brothers and sisters raised Mormon. So when I first got interested in God, what do you think? How I got a knock at the door? My sister sent missionaries. So I did Mormon missionaries for 8 weeks. And I'll tell you something. I always say I became a Christian the same day.
So you challenged.
That's right. So I became a Christian the same day I became a not Mormon. And here's why this is important to me. In the end, when I ask Christians, why are you a Christian? Here's what I get. Number one answer, I was raised in the church. Number one answer. Number two answer, I've had an experience of some nature that has confirmed for me that this is true. Okay, great. Third reason, I've been transformed by what Jesus did in my life. Three great answers, but guess what? Those are also the Mormon answers. And that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Imagine they give you a scenario. What if I told you that God came to me yesterday and a vision and gave me three things to tell you, Meg, and I'm going to tell you those three things right now. How would you ever falsify my claim? You couldn't.
No.
Because you could say, no, he didn't. I could say, yes, he did. Yeah. Now, if I told you instead that God came to me yesterday in human form and had lunch with me in my backyard with two of my friends and told me three things, and then he helped me dig my trench for my new irrigation line, and we built a treehouse together, well, now that's a claim you could actually test and falsify or verify, because you could ask my friends.
Right.
You could examine the ditch for divine elements. You know, you could see how cool
is the
treehouse.
Tree
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So now this is the kind of claim we have as Christians. We don't have a claim that has say, just trust me. I had this. Just trust me. We have a claim that can actually be examined because it's grounded in a historical event in the past,
which is going to be increasingly more important. Because people don't trust one another. We
That's
identify
right.
marriages, for instance, who are having marital difficulty, identify the spouse as the problem, the spouse is the issue, you're the enemy, and you know, our thinking gets very, very distorted. But we need to change the way we think. And I think that if we learn to change the way we think, we can articulate Christianity in a new way, and we must learn to do it, because non-believers are not going to trust us just because we're nice people.
If that's
or
the case,
because we've had a great experience. They're not. Because we're branded as not nice people. We're branded as people who don't think.
Right.
We just accept. It's all experience. And we're kind of woo-woo out there. You know?
Yeah.
And they're like, why would I trust that? So in the years, in the generation following us, and in the next 30 years, being a good apologist is going to have to include knowing the evidence.
Yeah, I think your definition of what you believe faith is will also dictate how well you stand up in crisis. So if you believe that faith is really just leaning in hard, even when there's no evidence to support this, that the more blind your faith is, the more true your faith is, you know, the more difficult it is to believe something, that you must really be a person of faith if you can believe that. If that's what you believe faith is, that's going to impact the way you hold up in crisis. If on the other hand, you believe that faith is the reason trust in what we can't see on the basis of what we can see or have seen, well, that's a different view of faith.
We forget that second part of that.
That's right.
That we are holy people if we just have faith in God and a blind faith.
That's right. Exactly. Well, first of all, let me say this to you. You will never have, in any worldview you hold, any suspect you take to a trial, you are never going to have 100%. The standard of proof in jury trials is not beyond a possible doubt. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. Why? Because every case you're ever going to work, there will be some unanswered questions. Every case I've ever worked has had unanswered questions. And juries are asked to make a decision in spite of the fact they have unanswered questions, because this is still the most reasonable inference from evidence. So here, by the way, as an atheist, I held a worldview for which I had unanswered questions. For example, how did the universe come into being? Why does there appear to be fine-tuning in the universe for life? Well, how does origin of life occur in the universe? Why does there appear to be fine-tuning in biological structures? How do I get consciousness? And how do I get free will? And how do I account for transcendent objective moral truths? These are things I had no answer for as an atheist.
And the most ardent, brilliant atheists
are still divided over
this. And scientists,
yes.
Evolutionists can't.
Right, so this is the point. So you have to accept that you still hold a worldview that you can trust, even though you have a number of unanswered questions. I actually think that the number of unanswered questions on that side of the ledger is greater than the number of unanswered questions on this side of the ledger. But if you think you can't make a decision while there are still unanswered questions, that's fallacious. Instead, we got to say, no, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. You have enough to make a decision, and you're not going to have every answer. And by the way, if we've got someone on our jury that we think can't make a decision that way, we simply won't impanel them.
But how you can identify that ahead of time so that you want to exclude
Well, you have to
them.
Kind of ask this question. Are you the kind of person who has to have every question answered before you can make a decision?
Oh.
And people will sometimes honestly tell
and
you, yeah, I
think
I am.
And you're asking people to make decisions that are going could potentially end a person's life.
That's what I always say. The standard of proof is different in different kinds of trials.
Okay.
But the most critical trials involving the future life or death of our defendants are the standards beyond a reasonable doubt. If that standard is good enough to determine whether this guy should live or die, it's also good enough for you and I to use to determine about our eternal life.
Exactly.
So
yep.
That standard is more than good enough. So I think we use that standard when we make these kinds of decisions. If you're looking for, I have to have 100% certainty, tell me what area in your life you have 100% certainty about. Every guy I ever met who eventually found out that he was being cheated on, or any woman I've met who found out she was being cheated on, before she found out, she'd have told me there's no way. Most of them.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing about working cold cases. I don't work serial killers. I work cold case murderers. There's a difference.
Okay, tell me the difference.
Well, serial killers, sometimes, you know, when you finally go to jail with that guy, your neighbor will say, man, that guy's a freak. I'm glad you took him to jail because, man, it smells bad over there and
He's
up all night long. He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
But when you talk to the neighbor and you take someone to jail for a murder 30 years ago, they'll typically tell you, no way. I've been living next door to that guy for 30. He's a deacon at our church. He watches my kids when I'm not home. There's no way he could do it. Here's the scary reality of it is, all of us are like that guy. He's done something, and then he can basically cover it and live a regular life. It's a one-time event for these guys. They aren't serial killers. They did one murder.
It's terrifying.
It
and
is.
You, like me, get to see the deepest inner workings of a person behind closed doors.
That's right.
And they look so normal.
Well, let me tell you what's so scary about that. How would you describe this? I've had defense attorneys who did not hold a Christian worldview who would come to me and say, there's no way my guy did it. He might be stupid. He might not have done some, but he's not a killer. They don't hold a Christian worldview because we know as Christians that
anybody
we have the one worldview that explains the enigma of man. How is it that humans can be so amazingly beautiful and capable of great beauty? At the same time, that same guy who's capable of being, you know, wonderful is deeply fallen.
Right.
And in a split second could do something that
capable,
is horrific. How does that?
Acts.
How can that be? Mm-hmm. Well, I think most of the non-believing world can't understand that. But we do. We have a worldview that describes we're created in the image of God, but deeply fallen, right? Rebellious.
Right.
Our worldview actually explains what I see in my casework better than my old atheist worldview.
Yes.
Now, here's the kind of thing we're trying to teach young people. Not just that there's evidence about Jesus, not just that there's evidence about God's existence, that all the Christian worldview actually makes the best sense of what they experience day to day. And if they know that, then when they experience evil, don't think we're the only ones who have to explain evil. The atheist also has to explain how to handle evil, where does it come from. All the questions that are imposed on the Christian also have to be answered by the atheist.
Right. In the next 30 years, what's going to be the biggest challenge for Christianity, for the survival of Christianity in the next 30 years?
I think if you just said, what is the biggest challenge to Christianity? Back when I was a young man, I probably expressed it as much as anybody else. I would have said, well, because science can basically explain everything you needed God to explain. Naturalism, the theory of evolution, scientific explanation, scientific development, I think was the wedge that was threatening to divide. Now, it turns out the more we know about science on the molecular level, the case is actually even stronger for God's existence. What we discovered about DNA, I think that's even harder for naturalism to explain. But what I think this generation, my kids, your kids, they don't want to hear our case for God's existence until we first walk through the door of human sexuality. That is the wedge issue. What do you guys believe about that? Because
exactly.
If you don't agree with me on that, I don't want to hear your case for whatever you believe. So we're going to have to be able to articulate, number one, why we believe our Christian worldview is true, even if it's not popular. That's why I always say, I am not a Christian because it works for me. I'm not a Christian because I'm hoping for heaven or afraid of hell. I'm not a Christian because it transformed my life. I'm a Christian simply because it's evidentially true.
And it's true.
I'm stuck with it, whether I like it or
and
not.
And I want to live in truth.
And I want to live in truth.
Well, and the wonderful thing for me and the work that I do, because I do a lot of work and reading and explanation about human sexuality and the development of sexuality. And, you know, one of the things that's very easy for me to say is to get people to agree, young people to agree. Do you believe that the development of sexuality is complex or simple? Oh, it's complex, of course. So it's more than just a slap me a genetic answer, that's who I am. Well, no, it's that's who I am. But you just said it's complicated. It's social, it's psychological, it's emotional, it's spiritual, it's physical. It's so complex. And what our culture does, because we're so sex obsessed, is we slap very simple answers on very complex problems.
Yes.
Bruce Jenner.
Yeah, oh, I can tell you something. This is not just true for... imagine this. If I launched an objection to you, an objection about Christianity or about our views about morality, I can launch the objection with a simple 140-character soundbite. This is the case with all the other side. The other side can make its case powerfully with rhetorically powerful soundbites. Of course, you and I both know that the answers are much deeper, much richer, much more robust. If you're going to ask me
but
to respond...
But they're not issue-oriented.
Right.
They're name-calling and branding.
Oh, sure.
You know, they're naming the problem around the actual issue, but they don't want to talk about issues. They want... it's all for silence.
Well, let's put it this way. If I said to you, okay, how can there be such a good God if God is all-powerful and all-loving, yet we have all this evil in the world? I just launched the objection in about 30 words.
Mm-hmm.
But your response to this objection, well, you can write books about that response. You certainly can't get on Twitter with me and have a battle about the problem of evil. But when you say, why would you object to two people who are committed being in a loving, committed relationship? I've now launched the objection in 30 words. You know the answer to that objection, though, is not a Twitter response.
No.
It's a deep, robust answer, which is grounded in good thinking, good philosophy. It's grounded in biology, the nature of who we are as humans. It's even, then we can even take a step and ground it in theology. But the point is, it's a robust response that's going to be paragraphs. Now, here's the problem. I'm not sure that this culture is patient enough for anything more than 140 characters.
I had a young patient, 15 years old, say, oh, Facebook is old because it takes too much time. Everything's Instagram.
Oh, isn't that a great line? I've got to remember that, because if that's happening, and it is.
It's happening.
If you use Instagram, I do. Mm-hmm. If you flow through it, if someone writes more than a couple of lines describing their picture, no one reads that.
They don't read it.
So the point
everything is images and impressions.
Yes, it's truncated.
Image and impressions.
Yes.
Image impressions. And this is where we're training our kids to be. However, we need to train thinkers, because I believe young people want to think. They want to dig. They want to talk. They want a question. They want an audience. They want somebody to listen to them. So if we can be patient enough to listen to them for a while, then we can wedge our way in and ask questions. And I try to do a lot of teaching by asking questions. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? Well, why would that be? And that's a very powerful way, I think, to bring in, to introduce the idea that there is evidence for Christianity.
Yes, let me just say this to you. If you know that the response we have to give cannot be done in 140 characters, but has to be done in the context of a larger, broader conversation, then you know that the people you're going to impact most are your own loved ones who will give you that kind of time. So here's the problem I have. Parents will come to me after a conference where I teach at Summit Worldview Conference high schoolers. We do a thing called College Prep with Frank Turek and Mike Adams, where we're teaching young people. And they'll come up afterwards and say, can I buy your book? My 23-year-old is no longer a Christian. I always tell them, I can give you this book and you can take it to your, but she's not going to read it. Here's the reason why, is that this is best done in the context of ongoing conversation. The first Christian casemaker, apologist, that your kids need to hear from is you, not from someone writing a book.
Right.
So what we have to do as parents is master the case.
Right.
So I always say, we don't need another $1 million apologist. We need $1,001,000 apologist.
Yeah.
We need all of us to have enough information to be able to master the communicate it well enough to our own, by the way, if anyone listening to this, and you know it, I know it in our own personal lives, we've all got somebody in the age of 15 to 30 who has walked away from their faith. We all have them in our immediate family.
Yeah, exactly.
And we all have it in our extended family.
Yeah.
Well, are we happy with that? But if you think those numbers are going to go down going forward, you're crazy. They're only going to go up.
Going to go up.
Are we prepared to deal with that, or we just want to let it happen? We're down 8 points in the Pew report from 7 years ago, from 78 point something to 70.8. Mm-hmm. So it's about a point a year people will walk away. And by the way, they're not walking over to atheism yet. They're walking into the no affiliation category, the nuns. That's growing.
That's right.
Here's what that means. It means we're not losing them to atheism yet.
No.
There's some form of theist or deist. We could still make the case for Christianity to those theists and deists.
Well, it's God-given. God puts in infants a sense of the spiritual dimension, a sense that I can do this, but something else out there has to move. And kids do know what's right and what's wrong. Even a six-month-old who whaps his mommy in the face puts his head down in shame. I should not have done it. It was wrong. So if we go at our children with the idea that they want to believe because they're born to believe in something,
right.
It's there. And with what I do the exact same thing with parents, is I say the best thing that I can ever do for a child is to help and encourage their parent. Because
right.
Parents want me to come in and tell their high schools full of these kids why they shouldn't be sexually active. I said, I can do that. And I can fly in and I can get aroused up for about a week. But
yeah.
Then they go home, and then they're with their friends. You're the staying power.
You know, you
power.
Sound just like me. We used to use DARE in our agency. We
uh-huh.
teach drug
yes.
and alcohol
yeah, yeah,
resistance
yeah.
education.
Yeah.
And we did it for a number of years until we finally graduated those fifth graders. When they started graduating high school, we started measuring their drug use and alcohol use. It was no statistical difference between the years we weren't doing DARE. We don't do DARE anymore. Oh, that's like a 10 to 16 week. I mean, it's different for every agency. That's a lot of intensive 1 hour a week kind of training. It turns out, when I was working gangs for 2 years in South Central Los Angeles County, mm-hmm. and I can tell you, I saw every kind of gangster you could possibly see. They all have one thing in common. There's one common factor in all the gangsters I work. It's simple. It's lack of dad.
Yeah.
Period. Okay? So when I used to do these meetings and moms would come and say, what are you guys doing to keep my kids out of gangs? We would say nothing. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
I can do as a cop.
It's so deep.
This is a parenting issue.
Yeah.
So if you're asking, what can I do? What can the church do? What can you youth pastors do to keep my kids from walking away? Nothing. We can help you. But we have to take responsibility for our own kids' spiritual formation. And if we're not willing to do that, it's a direct relationship between frequency and impact.
Yeah.
If you just do one talk a year, no frequency. But if you're modeling a thoughtful, reasonable, well-grounded, evidential faith every day in front of your kids, you've got a great opportunity that they will repeat that kind of grounded, evidential faith in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, if I ask people, why, give me 5 reasons why I should trust the Bible, most people are like, can't give you one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's got to end. That's why we write these books. That's why we're doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
Not because, you know, I don't need another career. I've had a career.
Yeah.
I'm retired.
Right.
We're doing great. The issue is, do we think there's something we want to impact in the church while there's still time?
Right.
And that's why we're doing this
And
work.
The impact is going to come through the parents. The impact is, it's not the pastors, it's not the speakers,
right.
It's not even necessarily the books. But those are all just utensils that we can use to help the real influencers in the family, which is a mom or a dad or somebody. You're absolutely right.
Well, so people say to me, well, how do I get to that kind of trend? Well, of course, you don't have to master, you don't have to be a physicist to understand the argument for God's existence from cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to understand a little bit. And you need to keep your resources close to you. When jurors go back in the jury room, we don't expect them to remember everything the expert witness has said, but they can ask for read back, and the court reporter will come in and read back the testimony of the experts. Well, I'm asking people to start assembling the libraries and read those tools so that when they're challenged and they know the answer, they can go back to the book, the expert witness, pull it off the shelf, get the read back, take another step with their kids.
Right. And it's doable. You know, I think that parents are afraid in a way. I think that parents are afraid to engage their kids, first of all, because they buy the lie. You know, parents always say, I don't want my kid to end up doing this because of peer pressure. So don't worry about his peer pressure. Worry about your own peer pressure.
Yeah, no kidding.
One of the reasons you don't want to talk to your kids about Christ is because you don't want to look like an idiot to them.
Right. That's right.
Don't worry about it.
That's
you know,
right.
But first, there are ways you can dialogue with your kids to draw them out. Because parents say, well, my teenager doesn't want to talk. I said, oh, yeah, they do. They're talking a lot. But they want to talk to somebody who will listen to them talk about themselves. Because teenagers all like to talk about themselves. We all do.
Yes.
You know, but if they know they have a captive audience in you and you keep saying, tell me more, tell me no more, tell me more, and to engage, eventually those conversations are going to go deeper.
Yes.
And you can be prepared to go deep with your kids. You don't have to have a master's in theology
no,
or master's
don't.
In some kind of science.
I'll tell you what, you're already interested in something. You're already spending 5-10 hours a week doing something.
Yes.
You already are. There's a show you've got DVR'd.
Yes.
There's some sport thing you're doing. There's some, I'm telling you, we're all invested in something. I'm simply asking people to reprioritize their investments. Because
right.
we have to say, hey, that whatever we're doing right now, that's not working.
Right.
So let's get serious about what takes 2 hours a week to read this stuff? Really? You don't have 2 hours a week of discretionary time you're already wasting?
Right.
I bet you do.
Right.
Just assess where that is and eliminate it.
And do it.
For something you think is... By the way, we'll drive our kids to all the tournaments. We'll drive our kids to all the AP tests. We'll drive our kids to all the tutoring that's necessary. Yeah. But this is an area we don't touch.
You know, we've bought into the lie that we need to create a great portfolio for our children before they graduate high school, certainly before they graduate college, and then they will be successful. But
right.
what do we leave out of that portfolio? I mean...
Spiritual formation. It's out of it. Yeah.
Christian's
and here's what
the
we
best
do.
Christian.
And I would do the same thing as you. Youth pastor, pizza, games, just come, bring your friends. I just want more people here. Really?
Because I'm a really nice guy.
No, I'm gonna
look
drive.
How nice I am.
Yes. And instead, what I decided is, okay, we lost all of our seniors the first year. All but one left Christianity. The second year I was a youth pastor, I said, okay, we're done with that. We're going to raise the bar so high that whoever stays will stay forever.
Right.
So that's what we did.
Nice.
It does
and it
work.
Worked.
It does work, yeah.
If kids like to be anything, they like to feel smart. They like to feel knowledgeable. They like to at least talk right. and dig with you. And they're so much more open to that than we give them credit
and
for.
And don't treat them like kids. I have a college expectation of high schoolers. I have actually a college expectation of junior hires.
Talk to them like they're smart thinking people.
That's
and
right.
they'll become smart thinking people.
That's right.
Jay Warner Wallace, this has been extraordinary. And I have a confession. When I first started interviewing, it was one of the first things I said to you when I said hello to you. I have a child who needs to read your book. Well, I am going to go back through your book because I need to dialogue with my child,
right.
adult child.
Right. Yeah, we all do.
I don't need to just hand him a book. It's, you know, we need to engage. We need to learn. We need to be more thinking people. And I think that that is going to be perhaps what the future of Christianity in the young people is going to hinge on.
I think you're right.
Is how willing we are to roll up our sleeves and engage and do the hard work.
And it's not about whether we think we can win this.
No.
If we can't win it, I want us to be faithful in the process.
Yes.
But you won't be faithful and stand strong unless you believe it's true.
Exactly.
So we have to know
and
it's
we
true.
Have to know, we have to believe, and we have to be able to articulate it in a calm and a reasonable manner.
Right. If you don't think it's real, you're going to end up sounding like a chihuahua. If you know it's real, you're the big dog in the yard. Okay? So the question is, if we're going to bark like chihuahuas,
I don't want to be a chihuahua.
I don't want to be a chihuahua either, so that's why.
Thank you so much. God's blessing. I just want this New York Times bestseller. I'll tell you the truth. It's just so important.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for your great work. Thank you for your mindset and for being faithful in writing the book.
Thank you. We're big fans of your work, so I just want to be so glad to be here. Thanks.
Thank you.
As Christians, we have to know what we believe and know why we believe it. That's why I think J. Warner Wallace's book and his ministry are so important. These tools arm us to defend our faith and to pass it on to the next generation, and there's no greater legacy we can leave behind. I urge you to read his book and explore his website, where you'll find videos and articles and other resources that all clearly lay out the evidence in support of Christianity. It will enrich your faith and strengthen your witness. You can find a link to his ministry on our website, drjamesdobson.org. Here at Family Talk, we're committed to standing for truth, and I invite you to join us. Every donation to the ministry helps us to tell more people about God's vision for marriage and families. And this month, for any donation of $20 or more, we'll say thank you by sending you one of our best resources for struggling marriages. Dr. Dobson's book, Love Must Be Tough, helps couples build intimacy in even the most troubled marriages. To give today, call 877-732-6825 or click the tab at drjamesdobson.org. This is Dr. Meg Meeker saying God bless and thank you for listening today. We'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
When you become a parent, you find out quickly that kids don't come with instruction manuals. But you'll be glad to know that now they do, or at least with an iPhone app, free from Family Talk. This app personalizes resources around where you are in life. Whether you're a mom, dad, or looking for encouragement in your marriage, this app is for you. The app is packed with parenting and marriage advice from the expert on such matters, Dr. James Dobson. The app also allows you to set reminders to help you keep connected to God and your family. Go to the Family Talk website at drjamesdobson.org/app to download your free customized Family Talk app today. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org/app.